Welcome, everyone, to our World Peace Diet teleconference for the World Peace Diet Circle, and I'm so glad you could join us here this evening. It's October 20th, 2016. We are back in California after being away for 11 months. Big thank you to Tara Gardner, our good friend who's took such good care of our place while we were away. And a big thank you to quite a few of you that we saw along the way in passing as we traveled throughout, I guess we went to about 31 states and 6 foreign countries, I just kind of figured out, in the last 11 months. And it was a great, overall, a wonderful experience. And we felt like we were able to really work together with the local grassroots groups in dozens and dozens of cities and communities to help them in their mission of bringing the vegan message of compassion, kindness, and sustainability to their communities. And we just are so grateful to so many wonderful angels along the way for on every level, kind of watching over all the different details. There's so many things that can happen on a tour like that when we're living in an RV and traveling and going from place to place and doing a lecture virtually every night a lot of times. So it was a lot of wonderful collaboration that happened, and I'm really grateful, of course, to Madeline, too, wonderful partner in our project here. And thank you all so much for the work that you're doing. I know that if you're on this call, you're committed to helping to not only deepen your understanding of how we can create a society that is actually evolving in the direction of harmony, peace, and awareness, sustainability, and freedom, and kindness, and respect for each other and for all beings. But you're also actively working to help participate in that endeavor. I think there's no greater gift we can give to the world today than to do that. So this is really exciting. It's great to be here, and you may be aware that we're heading off to Asia in a couple of weeks. Actually, I just realized now it's election day on November 8th. We're out of here. I don't know what's going to happen on that day. Looks like there could be all kinds of fallout in many different directions. And I'm really resisting any temptation to get into any kind of political discussions here, and focus on the World Peace Diet message. So, but anyway, we're leaving on November 8th, and we won't be back until, I think it's around December 26th. So, we'll be in Asia, in China, Taiwan, and Vietnam, and Singapore, and Hawaii. And some of you may be aware we're putting on a World Peace Diet training on the Big Island the weekend of December 9th to 11th. And so if you want to find out and join us, it would be wonderful to have any of you who are interested to join us there. There's a beautiful vegan eco-retreat center there called the Banyan Tree, and they are excited about hosting us for this event, and they've like chopped their prices in half. It's really amazingly reasonable. And I think it's only like $45 a night for lodging, and only $60, I guess, for all 6 meals. So it's anyway, if you're interested, we tried to make it available. Let us know. I mean, you can go to our website, to our tour schedule, and just click on the link there, and you can contact Ray. If you go to the tour schedule under December 11th to 13th, find out all the information. And if it looks like a doable thing, please let us know. So, okay, I just wanted to go ahead and start like we usually do, taking a few minutes just to relax a little bit and come into our shared space together, which is a space of kindness and caring and awareness of the interconnectedness of all life. And so if you can turn your attention within, if you're not driving your car or whatever, let's just turn our attention within and give thanks for this precious time that we have, the next 90 minutes is what we usually run, depending, for this time to connect together across the miles with each other and pooling our resources and connecting with the inspiration that we feel to do the best we can to embody what veganism is as a effort to live a life of kindness and caring and respect for others, all living beings, for animals, for future generations, for hungry people, whoever's oppressed or whoever may be having difficulties, to cultivate a community of kindness and caring, and to make an effort to go to the roots of our dilemmas as individuals and as a society by questioning all of the official narratives. And we give thanks for all of the groups and the individuals who are on our planet right now, who are working together with us, either knowingly or unknowingly, to help raise awareness about these issues. And we give thanks for all the beautiful people in the past and also in the future who are part of this movement as well. We're part of a huge, I think, just a wave that's building and building and building toward an awakening of our higher sensibilities to understand that we have a purpose on this earth, to celebrate our lives with joy and freedom and abundance, and to create communities of sanity and kindness and awareness. So we give thanks for each other and for the inner spirit of truth and love and joy and freedom and peace and harmony and gratitude that is our true nature. And we give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together on this call this evening will be ripples that bring healing and peace and abundance and awareness into our world for the benefit of all living beings. And so it is. All right, so bless you all again, and thanks for joining us. We have a number of things we are interested in talking about, and our good friend Judy Carman is on the line with us, I can see, and also our good friends Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson are with us. They'd like to talk a little bit about this exciting development that's happening in Cincinnati. Maybe we can go ahead and start with them. Remember that if you press star, I think it's star 6, right? I hope I'm right about that. Press star 6 on your phone and you can, star 6, that's it. You can raise your hand and then we can unmute your phone and you can ask or whatever you want or make a comment. The whole purpose really of our call, for those of you who may be new, is to provide a context for a discussion. So if you have anything that's bothering you about your life as a vegan, something that you think could be would be helpful to have some light shed on it, feel free to press star 6 and raise your hands and I'm happy to respond, and other people may also be interested in responding, and to build our community. And also, if you have anything you'd like to celebrate or any concerns you have to share, questions and so forth, this is a great opportunity. The time usually seems to kind of fly by. Suddenly it's over. So let's go ahead, and without any further ado, I'll go ahead and introduce Mark and Anna, and unmute their phones, and like I say, press star 6 if you want to ask them a question, or me, or just say something in general to everybody. So, Mark, yeah, well, I don't have to really introduce Mark and Anna. I think you all, most of you know Mark and Anna. Mark is a well-known restaurateur, He's a longtime vegan, I think about 40 years or more now at this point, and was the first one to really get the World Peace Diet study groups going in Cincinnati. And the first one was there and joined us on our first World Peace Diet training way back many moons ago in Michigan that we had. And he's the author of the World Peace Diet cookbook that's coming out soon. And then Anna works together with Mark. She's a yoga teacher in Cincinnati and has a vegan yoga studio, World Peace Yoga. So we just recently, I guess it was in September, a little over a month ago, had a World Peace Diet facilitator training that they helped us put it on. We co-facilitated in many ways, and it was a wonderful success. People came from all over the place, from quite a few other states, as well as from around Ohio and the Midwest, and joined us there at the World Peace Diet Yoga Studio and also at the Mark's Sanctuary, where he has some horses that he and his wife, Elizabeth Betsy, are lovingly caring for. So, Mark and Anna, I am unmuting your phones here, and let's see. Okay, hello. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes. Great. Thanks, Will.
Hello,
great.
Will.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us the news. We're excited to hear what's going on.
Well, first of all, we're still high from the facilitator training. It was so great to have, as you said, people come from all over and here to Cincinnati and then to radiate back out into the world with such great camaraderie, collaboration, inspiration. So great to have you and Alan here and all the others.
Yeah, you guys did a great job, by the way. I thought it was a fantastic event. I mean, I wish everybody could have just seen the how we all were there towards the end. Just it was a beautiful, it was a beautiful gathering and sharing, and the food was great, and it was a beautiful thing. Thanks to you both for helping to arrange all that.
So, well, the big news. I think we've mentioned it before, but now it's actually starting to materialize and coming to fruition. So we're in the process of opening the first vegan Montessori school in the United States, and it's a farm Montessori school, so it'll actually be on a 14-acre farm. That's over 75 years old. It's been in the same family that we're in the process of acquiring. And as a matter of fact, it's that farm that we visited when you were here.
Oh, yeah. That was really beautiful. The beautiful valley that we saw there. Yeah,
yes,
that was
yes.
Really a beautiful piece of land with some nice buildings. And that would be terrific. Wow, that's quite ambitious.
And it would also be a sanctuary in addition to housing the school. We'd also be have some rescued farm animals there in addition as part of the farm school.
Really? Oh, that's amazing. So you'd have a whole educational center. People could come and at certain times and actually see the pigs that other people are eating or that maybe they were even eating, but now they can see, look in their eyes, and that's a tremendous, we've been to so many sanctuaries, and we always hear stories of people going vegan when they visit sanctuaries. So that's great.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. In addition to the sanctuary aspect, we also have Elder Song Farm. So Allison Fields, who is a vegan yoga teacher, is now actually a famed archaeologist. She actually found the most significant archaeological find in Greece in like the past 50, 60 years, about 2
really?
Years ago. But she decided to get out of archaeology and get into vegan food production and vegan education. So she's going to be a teacher at the school. And so the school is actually going to be, as I said, a farm school. So it will actually be a working farm in addition to the rescued farm animals, who will not be beast of burden. They'll be beast of leisure. and enjoy their newfound freedom. So Allison will have a CSA and be providing food for the school on a daily basis. So
the kids will be learning how to grow food, too.
Right, yeah, it's going to be so great for the kids, my gosh. Wow.
And so we're going to start with preschool and then add grades. But we're just it's like starting kids as facilitator training when they're 2-3 years old. So catch them early. So between the food and the growing food and of course, the tried and true Montessori education and the vegan aspect, yoga, of course, all different aspects of spirituality will just be part of the daily curriculum, along with a rigorous core curriculum of academics as well. So we're just really enthusiastic about it. And there's it seems to be happening all over in the vegan movement of a 20, 30-something explosion of families with young children. So the timing is exactly right here, and I think it's going to continue that way. So we really see this as a model for peace, vegan peace education, that once people see that we're doing it, it's our vision that it'll start springing up all over the country. And it's also being, as we look at it, it's being publicly funded, even though technically it's a private school. It's being funded in a grassroots way. So we're actually launching that funding platform as we speak. So we invite everybody to please come to our website to find out more about the school. That's Heart, H-E-A-R-T, Montessori.com. And there's a umlaut over the A, two dots over the A, which if you're on your phone or if you're on an iPad or computer, you just push that A key down and all these different A's will come up with diacritical marks, and you just want the one with the two dots over it. So it's Heart Montessori, and there's also a Facebook page.
And Instagram.
And Instagram. And what's the Facebook event, Anna?
Well, the Facebook name is Heart Montessori, and so is Instagram, but the name of the event on Facebook is Heart Montessori. Let me see.
Funding the future.
Funding the future. Heart Montessori, yeah. Funding the future.
And do you have to put the umlaut on Facebook also? Everywhere?
No, it'll pop up with or without.
Oh, okay. You just put
without
Heart Montessori, it'll come.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Just for the website, but not on Facebook.
Just for the website to get it right.
So we're really putting the word out all over the country, really all over the world, for all of us to collaborate. We're really enthusiastic and here locally, but liking to obviously see this as a model for acting internationally, globally. So the request is that people really do look at what we're doing and to participate. Send your well wishes and as well as your dollars and to assist us financially to get this going. And we have a great group of people that are dedicated and inspired Montessori teachers and sign language interpreting, music, Spanish. So the kids are just going to get a great, well-rounded education. Really, like I've never seen before. When we look at this and we go, oh, my gosh, I just would have loved to have been brought up in an educational system like this.
Right.
Finally, here it is. So.
Wow. And so one question sort of just immediately springs to mind, and that is you keep saying that it's a vegan Montessori school. So the obvious question, I guess, is what does Montessori say about all this? Do you have to go through hoops with them, or can you do whatever you want?
We pretty much have, we definitely have license to do whatever we want. Our aspect of that is, of course, we'll be serving meals every day. The kids, that's part of the curriculum. It's not just an afterthought. It actually is part of the curriculum. So not only will we be helping to assist in learning how to grow food and hands-on growing the food,
right.
Then they'll also, of course, be eating the food on a daily basis just to make that innermost innate connection that most people don't have from that early age on, where it's just perfectly disconnected. So this is going to be reinforced. And the interesting thing is that in her later years, Maria Montessori actually taught vegetarianism, and it was considered to be a part of the upper grades and an Erkinder experience, where the middle school to high school kids would live on a working farm and learn sustainability and how to have their own autonomy and to learn the business of farming, so that they would have to really be out in the world and take responsibility for their lives. So
right. The
significant difference for us is that we're going to start that whole process at preschool. So while we're starting with the first year with the preschool, then we'd like to add the elementary and middle school and then high school. So eventually kids will be able to go all the way from preschool all the way through high school and beyond. So.
Right.
And Montessori is really big on peace education. In fact, just reading the materials and the educational experience, it's right in line with veganism. However, there aren't any schools that are incorporating veganism as part of the curriculum.
Yeah,
even though it's
basically showing how that can be done, essentially.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really just a deep sense of empathy and compassion, which is the inherent nature of the Montessori process, which is to nurture the innate spirituality of each child, of each person, each being, so that their natural compassion and empathy, which is our natural spirituality, comes out. And so that really is the heart and soul of the school, and I guess there's
yes.
a plan there. This is what we feel Maria Montessori actually was coming to in her later years, as she evolved, because that's the beauty of I think, this movement and just spirituality in general, that rather than being tied to things only being done a certain way, she was the first female physician in Italy, and so
right.
it's all about growth and growing, and so that's what we see as a natural progression of her work to take it to a just even more profound, deeper level in a practical sense, in the way that we live our lives on a daily basis. So.
Right. Yeah, and you also, I always think it's kind of amazing that in a country of, over 300 million people, and we're considered, one of the most advanced and wealthy and progressive and all that countries, and it wasn't too long ago, I think it was only about 2 years ago maybe, James Cameron and his wife started a school. You know James Cameron, everybody. He's the Titanic and everything, that famous movie producer, director. But they created this school, and it was the first, they say it was the first vegan school in the whole country. And, there'd never been a vegan school. And, I think, I'm not sure if that's true. I mean, but maybe it is. So you guys will be like the second vegan school.
second vegan school, but first Montessori vegan school.
Right, but still, it seems like it's such a such a no-brainer. I mean, no kid would want to eat the flesh and secretions of a horribly abused animal, and yet it's completely forced upon them without question. We finally now have the first vegan schools, even though veganism has been around as a movement for 70 years. So it's something that really is time, an idea whose time has come, for sure. I'm glad to see this happening.
Yeah, there are a handful of, or more than a handful, but not still not quite a few, the vegetarian schools,
right.
And,
sure.
And even Montessori schools. But
right.
To take that next step,
right.
And yes, we do feel we're following in the Canon footsteps, and we're really enthusiastic about it, especially that it's coming from the Midwest as well, because it's, as usual, those kind of
yeah.
things are expected on the West Coast.
California, right.
Yeah, or, yeah, and that's, which is where their school is. So we're
right.
We're really enthusiastic to see it happening here, because we really feel that, and more people are realizing that as things happen here, then it's becoming more normalized throughout the country. And
right.
That's what we'd like to see it become the norm.
Right, exactly. Great. Well, the thing is, it's a natural. It's a natural thing. I mean, I'm sure the kids will be delighted, and you just need to have parents who see the wisdom of this, and then, like you say, get public funding. Get anyone who I encourage everyone to find out more about this and support this effort. This is really pioneering work, a way to have an example in the United States, anyway, of vegan education that's effective and. I'm sure the kids will be so much healthier and happier because they're eating better. You know, I mean, that's already been shown to be a big impact on the well-being of the students during the class. You know, not only their physical well-being, but their mental and social, psychological, and, you know, the spiritual. It's all connected. And I remember just even reading those studies that were done when they, I think it was in Appleton, Wisconsin, it was probably about 15 or 20 years ago when they had this terrible problem with discipline, and kids bringing guns and knives into school and fighting and everything. And all they did was change the food. They just started serving. It wasn't totally vegan, but it was much more plant-based, but organic and fresh, really good food. And the problem just went away. I mean, when the kids started being very respectful to the teachers and to each other, and they were eating food that was just supporting them in a healthy way. And I think what you're doing is taking the principle to its logical conclusion and saying, let's make the whole school vegan. And I hope we get some, or you guys get some press, too, you know, getting newspaper articles that talk about this so that other people get the idea, pick up the ball, and run with it near where they are. But I guess the first thing to do is to get yours off the ground. So it's a great vision. It's a beautiful vision. I can just tell everybody who's listening that the space where, because we did have a chance to, one afternoon, right before we left on Monday, I remember it was, to go by and have a look. And, it's very, very, very nice. Very beautiful place. So we'll just hold your vision in our hearts with support and with love. Any final thoughts? Anything else you want to share or anything, before we move on? Anything else?
Well, I'll just, add that I'll post the event on the World Peace Diet page on Facebook so people can check out our fundraising event. And if you're able to contribute, great. But also just it's a virtual event, so you can say you're attending or interested and just sharing it. Anything you're able to do to help spread the word is wonderful. And we're just really looking forward to bringing this to the kids and starting peace and compassion from the little ones up.
Right. How old is your son now? Probably about three.
He's two. So he will start in the school next year.
Wow. Great.
Yeah.
Maybe he can go all the way through for 12 years.
That's what we'd love to happen.
Right. Great. All right. Well, it's so great to have a vision like that. That's beautiful. Thanks so much for sharing, Mark and Anna.
Yes.
Thank you. It's really inspiring to hear about this, and definitely if you can put it up soon on the World Peace Diet Facebook page, and I'll copy it in so it's in the email that goes out tomorrow to everybody. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks, Will.
All right.
Yes.
Thanks,
all right.
Will.
Thank
you. Thanks, everybody out there. Uh huh.
Yeah, thanks. All right, so that was really exciting. So if you have any questions for Mark or Ann, I think they'll be on for a little while longer.
go ahead and press star 6. And, yeah, education is a thing. I met Madeline, is a certified Waldorf school teacher, and I myself have a PhD in education from Berkeley, so I've been really interested in philosophy of education. I thought my PhD is in philosophy of education. And to me, this whole, the whole World Peace Diet, movement really, and the vegan movement as a, educational movement that is focused, of course, not just on children, but on adults as well, but all of us. And, we're only eating animal foods because we're educated into it. And if we can get an alternative perspective, I'm sure we would be happy to move in a more enlightened and compassionate and healthy and sustainable direction. And Montessori is a great fit. I think, you know, the Waldorf tradition would also be great. You know, Madeline's trained in the Waldorf school, which is very progressive also, although they're a little more wedded somehow, it seems like, to doing certain things. It's pretty much vegetarian, but they like kids to do knitting with wool and things like that. So it would be great if they would do, go vegan. I've given actually vegan lectures in Waldorf schools, and it went well. Judy has raised her hand, and so I'm going to go ahead. I was hoping to hear some from Judy about a few other things, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute Judy Carman. This is Judy Carman, everyone, and she is the really the co-founder with us of the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, a wonderful advocate and activist who's just such good friends of ours going back many, many years in Camp Lawrence, Kansas, the author of Chicken Soup. It's for the chicken soul. So here's them. And The Missing Piece. These great books. I highly recommend the Vegan Prayers. What's the name of your book, Soup for the Chicken Soul?
Peace to All Beings is the title, and then the subtitle is Veggie Soup for the Chicken
Soul.
That's
right, yeah, Veggie Soup. Veggie Soup for the Chicken Soul.
Yeah.
I love that.
Not chicken soup.
I saw this ad the other day, a cartoon the other day of a bunch of chickens saying, this is, you know, human soup for the chicken soul. We're turning the tables on.
Oh.
It was one of those.
Well,
I
wanted to thank Anna and Mark for this great thing that they're doing. This is amazing. And I wanted to mention that my sister, that and Will and Madeline know Anna, her name's Anna also,
is a
Montessori teacher. She runs a Montessori school, and she is vegan and works really hard to share vegan values with the kids. And it's very challenging because she has oversight from the state, so they come in and demand that she has milk in the fridge, cow's milk, and that sort of thing. But she has done a wonderful job and is totally devoted to teaching the kids kindness to little insects and teaching them a little bit about where their food comes from. And then, and that's in Lawrence, Kansas. And then also in Lawrence, Kansas, Perviz Birdie has a Montessori school also. And she is also vegan. Her whole family's vegan.
Right. Yeah.
And she does the same thing Anna does. She has some restrictions on her school because of state rules and all of that. But she does a really good job of conveying those values to the kids. So when I tell them about this school, they're going to be so excited, and they would probably come right up to Cincinnati if they could. But,
yeah.
And also, on top of that, I just found out about a school that just opened last year by a woman who is a longtime vegan, and she is calling it the School of Love. And it's totally vegan, and she makes that very clear to people when they enroll their children. So she isn't restricted because it's a private school, and it's small right now.
So she doesn't have to serve milk if she doesn't want to. Yeah.
Right. So far she's in the clear, but when she gets bigger, she may have some challenges.
And where's her school located, Judy?
It's in Lawrence also.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, all three of those women are involved in our vegan groups in town. And they're just going to be so excited when I tell them about this. And I know Anna and Praveen have talked to me a lot about going to the Montessori conferences and how frustrating it's been going there and trying to talk about veganism and how perfectly it meshes with the Montessori philosophy, veganism. I mean, and.
Right.
The whole idea that Maria Montessori was talking about was teaching peace to children, as Anna pointed out. And so, I mean, that requires veganism. We can't teach peace any other way. So I'm just wanted to say congratulations to the Heart Montessori School. And,
right.
Thank you guys for doing that. And,
thanks, Judy. Yeah, that's great.
Visualize that. Those schools just spreading all over the world.
Right, right. You know, it's definitely the wave of the future. If we're going to have a future, that's the wave of the future.
Right.
And it's happening a lot in other countries. I mean, my friend, I've talked about it before, in Russia, there's a whole huge movement of vegan schools there. I'm not sure about other countries. But, well, in Taiwan, it's... pretty much. They're all vegetarian, mostly vegan.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find out more. I'm not sure how it is in China, but we'll see what we can find out. But I think, it's definitely, something that, children themselves, if they weren't influenced by meat-eating parents, would be so open to. But you got to deal with the parents. That's always a difficult thing. And then, of course, you got to deal with the industries. And, here, like the dairy industry is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That they really make get these laws passed, unfortunately. But so did you want to say thanks for talking about that? And did you want to say anything about? I just want to tell everybody that if you're not aware, Judy has a monthly monthly column in the Sierra Club magazine for your part, your area of Kansas there,
right?
And you get to basically. Give them an alternative perspective on their meals if they really want to be environmentalists.
Exactly. The column is called Eating as Though the Earth Matters, which I just love. And the editor of this is called Planet Kansas, and you can actually look it up online and see the latest issue. And I have an article in there, and actually they also printed an article by another vegan here in town, Joanne Farb, who is giving a presentation to the Sierra Club. So things are shifting, for sure.
Right.
But the editor has told me that he's gotten some flack for printing my articles. I think I'm going into maybe the third or fourth year of having these articles printed in this journal.
Yeah.
And a lot of the readers are ranchers and hunters,
right,
and all of that. And, I didn't know if any of you all out there listening have ever been to Kansas, but it's pretty agricultural. And,
incredibly, so, right in the absolute teeth of the animal agriculture machine right there. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. If there aren't cows in the fields, there's hay or corn or soybeans in the fields for the cows and pigs and all of the unhappy animals that are being exploited. So, it's very exciting to be included in that little magazine, and I'm just thrilled that they're still printing it. Every time I write an article, I think, is this going to be the last one? They're going to be so complaining so much that he finally gives up, but he just keeps on putting them in there. So, and he himself has made the comment in the journal that we need to listen to what Judy has to say and pay attention, because we're running out of time and we have to think about all of the things that we can do. And he said in that, I'm definitely paraphrasing, but something along the line that he was trying himself. And it wasn't easy for him, but he was trying because he understands how important it is to go vegan for the earth. So, yeah, I think a lot of environmentalists have looked at animals as, mostly at the wild animals, as groups, like resources, that not necessarily to hunt, but resources to bring us pleasure. And it's our responsibility to protect them and their habitat. But it's not so much of a personal relationship that they have with the animals or a feeling that those animals have souls and individual personalities of their own. It's more of a kind of a group concept of, okay, we need to save the wolves and we need to save all these other groups of animals. So what I'm hoping to convey is, because I talk about farm animals, but I also talk about animals in the wilderness, is that they do have personalities and they have families and they mourn the losses of their families and they suffer when their habitats are destroyed and sometimes die because they can't find another suitable habitat and that there's a great deal of grief and pain that goes along with that to try to help them identify on a personal level with the animals.
Right. Yeah, I know. The thing is, they're not. They're raised in a society where they're just seen as like all of us, really. They're just animals, basically, is the idea. And it's great if you can get people to see, you know, get some kind of a feeling for them as having personalities, or like you say, even having souls. But I think, you know, just at a more basic level, we're abusing them. I mean, we're just using them for, you know, we're killing them unnecessarily, and attacking them, chasing them. If we're hunting them, and it's not necessary for us to do that, we can get all the nutrients we need to thrive on without harming animals, you know, on plant-based diets. You know, so it's not about judging them. It's just about showing that there's another way that we can live, and we can't. Not everybody can live like, you know, we can't live that way anymore.
Not anymore, right. I think that the basic concept that animals are not ours to use, that they're individuals in their own right, is hard to get across. And that's what I try to get across in every article in some way or another. Because that's, to me, that's the real consciousness raiser right there. Once you suddenly realize, oh, they're not here for us to use, it changes everything. It changes how you look at your clothes and your food and your medicine and everything. And not to mention the environment.
Right, so, it's that compartmentalization. You know, we love and protect our dogs and cats, but we don't care about other animals, and so to help people.
Even the dogs and cats, I think, are seen, until one gets that concept, are often seen as ours to use.
Sure.
Well, you know, for as long as we need them, and then when we don't need them anymore, then off they go in one way or another. And so they're here to serve us or guard us or whatever it may be. So so that's just, I think, such a key concept is, no, they're individuals. They're here for their own reasons. And they're not here for us to use. We're not dominant over them.
Yeah.
And, or we don't have the right to be dominant over them is what I should say.
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting us know about all these things. It's great, and for writing these articles for the Sierra Club. They should be open to these ideas. You know, they're more progressive people, and It does happen. You know, I remember this, it was not too far from you, actually. It was in Oklahoma. We were there a few years ago, and some woman came to our lecture on the World Peace Diet, and they bought a book, and she and her husband. And then I got an email from the guy, actually, the husband, about 2 or 3 months later, and he said, well, you know, my wife dragged me to your lecture, and then, you know, she bought the book, and then she wanted to read the book together, so, you know, we've been reading the book together, and I decided to go vegan. And I'm just calling you because not only was I a hunter, I was a professional hunter.
Oh, my.
He actually made his living doing hunting photography. And he said, I always loved animals. I used to love them. That's why I used to love being a hunting photographer. And then I realized, reading your book, that I wasn't really loving these animals. You know, I was shooting them, and that's not the way to love them. So I think of people, elephant hunters really, they do really have a feeling for the animals. They go out and they sort of feel like they're communing, you know, and
absolutely.
You know, after they kill the deer, they say, wow, what a beautiful animal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but it's so ironic, you know, and I think maybe they're not that far away if they could just undo that huge block, that like cement block between their eyes, just let's see what they're doing. And if I keep planting the seeds, you know, that's it.
Right. Well, I do feel a shift happening. Don't you, Will?
Yeah,
Given how many talks did you say?
We did about 250, I think, in the
11
months.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
So that's more than one a day.
Well, it's about one a day.
On some days.
A little less. On some days it was more than one. Some days we had to drive, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know it was a lot. Yeah, some days we did two.
Mm-hmm. But did you feel a shift?
Well, I personally do definitely feel a shift, you know, because there's so much more activity around veganism everywhere you go. I mean, there's just much more writing, teaching, classes, yoga, restaurants, you know, just the buzz, and especially on college campuses. I mean, everywhere it's just sort of, it's really becoming mainstream. I think it's definitely on the way to becoming mainstream. Almost everybody knows somebody who knows somebody who's vegan, right? I mean,
uh-huh.
You know, oh yeah, my friend's niece, she's a vegan. So it's they all know somebody who's a vegan, and I think that making it personal like that, where people are knowing, it's just that, you know, the more veganism spreads, the more it's going to spread. You know, it's just getting the critical mass going and getting the momentum moving to the point where we're able to reach people where the food is fantastic, and there's more and more types of vegan foods that are available to more people in mainstream settings, and it's making more sense on every level. We even have a presidential candidate, you know, that people are actually voting for the first time. I just voted, and so did Madeline, for Clifton Roberts. And I think, you know, it's going to be tiny this year, but just the fact that we have a third choice, you know, that we can vote for and feel really good about it, you know, that someone who really does have our values. And a vision for the future that's inclusive rather than exclusive.
Right, right. Well, and as Mark said, we're normalizing veganism.
Right,
and
right.
That is a real key, because people need to feel normal and like they belong to a group of other people and not be marginalized. And so the more it seems normal, the more people will be able to go vegan and feel really good about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
exactly.
I'm excited. I think things are really moving fast in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we'll just keep at it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Judy. Any final thing you want to mention else before we get on? There's a couple of people that have their hands up here, so I want to...
Okay. Well, I just, real quick, I'll just say I had a chance to rescue 39 birds.
Oh, yes. Tell us about that. That was a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very, very neat the way that happened. And they're all going to be able to be set free very soon. And so, but on that note, yes, I'll say goodbye. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah.
Well,
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye, Madeline.
Thank you. All right. Yeah, she sends her love to you. Thanks,
okay.
Judy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah, I was just talking to Judy a couple of days ago, and she was saying how she would go for a walk all the time where she lives, and there's this place called Heartland Birds or something like that, Heartland Birds, and she was tempted, and there were birds for sale for hunting. There were quails and partridges and turkeys, three types of birds for sale, and she was tempted to get a marker and change the sign from Heartland Birds to Heartless. and so, but she didn't. And then she was taking a walk, and this woman came by, and they just started chatting, and she found out that this was the wife of the guy that runs this bird selling thing, where they were that they sell birds to people to kill for food. And so she found out in talking to this woman that that he was going to get out of the business, and he had 39 birds, and they were going to kill them, and she said that she would get them herself and save them. She bought them from this guy and giving them to a place where they can be just they'll sit for a little while there to just be checked, and then they're going to be released into the wild. So because these are all birds that can thrive in the wild once they're released. So they're going to be going back to the wild again. And so that was just sort of one of those so-called coincidences. This woman just happened to talk to her right at the point where they were going to get rid of these birds and mentioned it to Judy, and Judy quickly jumped on the case there, and now these 39 birds are going to be released into the wild, which I think is just a beautiful story. Thanks so much, Judy. And I have a couple of hands up. Our wonderful friend Tara is on the line. Has raised her hand, so I'll go ahead and let's see. Tara, are you there? Let's see. I can't hear you. I'm not sure. I think let me mute. Maybe double check.
There we are. Can you hear me now?
Oh, cool. Now, yes, perfect.
Yeah.
I think
I muted and then muted, and now you are muted again.
Perfect. All right. Sorry about that. Very good.
All right. Hi, everybody. I've missed you. I haven't been on the call in a short while. A few calls, actually. But I have been living in Will's neighborhood for almost a year now and getting to know the folks around here and, you know, what they're interested in and so on. And there's a small vegan community and also a pretty active and thriving permaculture and environmental community. And so I've been kind of foraying into that area and bringing my vegan self into it. And oftentimes it does not include at all veganism, yet it's very nice to bring attention to it when I'm able
right.
to.
Uh-huh.
So I have a couple of questions. You don't need to go into a really long conversation because I don't want to take up other people's time, but I'm sure others are hearing about this, and I'm interested in your opinion about, first of all, carbon ranching. Of course, we understand how we all feel about ranching of any sort, but carbon ranching from an environmental perspective, and also aquaponics.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about aquaponics, but what is carbon ranching refer to?
Carbon ranching, I don't have a whole lot of details, but I will find out and I will tell you. And maybe we can talk about it on another call. But the idea is that I've heard of several environmentalists that are starting to raise cows in such a way, and if anybody on the call has any information on this, it would be interesting to hear from them, that actually – I don't know, maybe they put diapers on them or something. I don't know, but it's a lower carbon impact. And the idea is to, you know,
right,
have, anyway, so I don't really know that much about it. I was wondering if you had heard anything about it yet.
I think it's sort of, you know, the idea that you can do greenhouse gas offsets,
yes,
by growing plants and things that will, soak up carbon and, you know, sort of trying to offset the impact of the cattle. There's all this methane coming out, and then they're trying to figure out how they can balance that off with something else that they're doing, to sort of offset that, which, you know, it's, you know, there, and there's, yeah, there's different schemes to try to move in that direction. It's something. I think it's more of a, you know, of a feel good thing that we're, you know, it's like trying to capture the methane from cows to burn it to heat their barns and things like that in dairy operations. Some of those things are being used, but it's still like incredibly inefficient. You're growing huge amounts of grain and feeding it to animals, and they're converting it very inefficiently to saturated fat, cholesterol, and acidifying protein,
yes,
and manure, and methane and nitrous oxide. And you're going to try to, you know, offset that, and it's causing deforestation. Plus, it's, you know, it's a product that's not healthy for people to eat anyway, and it's inefficient. And we can't all, you know, the number of people we can feed that meat is so expensive in terms of land and petroleum and water use, especially in California. You know, there's serious problems with water. These animals, it takes a lot, you know, to, not only are they drinking a lot, but they have to eat fodder, and that, especially in the non-rainy season, they have to grow huge amounts of grain that they can eat during the winter and then during the summer. And so it's just, but you know, this is not going to go up down without a fight, you know. So they, so there, you know, there's all this flack about the global climate.
Right.
You know, it's well understood that, you know, animal agriculture, even though it's repressed, it's a, you know, the worst thing we're doing to climate destabilization. So they're trying to figure out a way to market their industry that we're really helping the environment, the same way the petroleum industry does, and the same way the nuclear industry does. And, you know, the same way the weapons industry, and they all try to do the same thing. They have PR, and they have people they pay, consultants to put together things. They pay scientists to put together things, and then they have plenty of money to get on NPR and to get on, you know, so-called progressive stations and to talk this game and make everybody wants to hear it. I mean, oh, that's great. Now I can have my hamburger and feel good about it because now they're doing carbon offsets over there, and so it's really better than eating tofu because that comes from far away or whatever. They, you know, they have all these rationalizations. But the basic fact is that you can't compare. It takes so much more land and petroleum and energy, plus the horrible suffering of these animals hanging upside down, having their throats slashed and everything else, and which they never want to talk about either. But that's the reality, and the products themselves are, you know, I don't have to say it, but they're not necessary. So I think it's understandable that people are going to do this. And the same thing with aquaponics. You know, it's a version of permaculture where you're basically, it's, you know, imprisoning fish in these systems where they say it's a perfect thing, you know, that these fish, the manure of the fish can go and help feed the, you know, I mean, help enrich the plants that are also part of the system. But it's, first of all, it's stealing the sovereignty of other beings, and you're making these fish live in a place that's artificial where you want them to, and then typically anyone doing aquaponics is going to be at some point eating the fish as well. That's considered part of the equation. So it's a imprison and kill operation, no matter how you look at it, and it's not necessary. I mean, you know, people are I think still convinced that we have to have some animals, you know, in our plant agriculture in order to have it work properly, in order to get nutrients back into the soil. We need manure, we need, you know, bone meal and blood meal, and the animals we can use them for that. You know, they can eat, stuff, and then they can, and we can use their manure, or we can grow fish, or we can have chickens. You know, all these ideas, and I think it's really wonderful to see that there are vegan permaculture theorists and practitioners. It's still relatively small because it's kind of going against, you know, a few thousand years of indoctrination and conditioning and sort of how we've always done things. But when I was in England, I really loved seeing I went to, you know, the Veg Fest there, and there was booths, vegan permaculture, and then all their literature, and then talking to people, and then going to the Vegan Society where I learned more. But in England, they're really making a lot of progress in this, and you know, because England is having a really pretty hard time financially and economically. I mean, and also just the meat and dairy industries there are having a hard time. And so there are models that are being implemented in England where instead of growing fodder for animals, they're growing lentils and certain beans that grow really well there, and eating, and the idea is we can eat these directly, and we can feed everyone, and we can export this also, and we can actually financially will do better than growing meat and dairy. You know, that they can actually make, they can feed a lot more people. You know, they can feed a lot more people if you just grow beans and lentils. And
what a great idea!
Yeah, exactly.
What a concept.
I know, so and what they found is that anytime you use animals in the equation at all for manure, for anything, it's always inefficient because you're feeding it to the animals and then getting their manure, and you lose a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just, you know, if you just feed, grow the plants directly and either feed them to people directly, or, you know, every 3 or 4 years you plow under some legumes to get the nitrogen back into the soil, that's what people did, you know, and we can do that again. So anyway, it's like rediscovering some older ways of doing things and questioning this idea that we need to imprison animals in order to feed ourselves, and that we can actually feed ourselves just fine without doing that. So it's there's a great questions power. I think it's a matter of education and practice, really, and it's slowly making progress in that direction. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks so much. And let's see, we have somebody else has their hand up. I just wanted to mention a nice, let's see here, happy birthday to Tartar. This is her birthday, so we sing happy birthday. Belvin, happy birthday. Happy birthday, Tartar. Also, really, thanks so much for all you're doing for our movement. It's really great. I really appreciate it, and bringing the vegan message even to those sometimes permaculture people, and you know, these are and Sierra Club people are the hardest nuts to crack in a way, because they think they already know, they're already doing everything right. And so anyway, but yeah, those are great questions. Michael Landfield, I just unmuted your phone. Michael is a good friend from Canada, the author of several books promoting vegan living, and maker of many videos also. And Michael, are you there?
Hi, Will. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on, and thank you for doing what you're doing. And hi to Madeline as well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, she says hello. Yeah, great. So tell us what's new. You've been working on some projects lately. It sounds great.
Yeah, I haven't been on this call for a while, but there are a few updates and one question for you as well. So first, just to let everyone know that my book now, The Interconnectedness of Life, is available in Italian version, so you can get that on Amazon or wherever books are sold. So The Interconnectedness of Life, Italian version. And soon enough, my book, The Lost Love, the new newest book, will be out in audiobook as well, which will be great for people who like audiobooks. And
great.
Two other things that I'd like to mention is that now they have a vegan truck in London, Ontario, that is called McVegans. So,
all right. McDonald's is going to probably sue them. But that's great.
Well, I would like to read a little short blurb of what they said here. But after months of hard work, we are now ready for you, London. Our world-famous burger that sold out at Ridfest will now be served every day at a location near you. Our food truck is officially operational and now serving awesome food downtown every weekday. So they're at the Western Farmers Fair Farmers Market, and hopefully you'll see them in the next so many years on every corner. Hopefully.
Right. McVegan's on every corner, right.
Exactly. And there's also a very great video friends of mine, Cindy and Robin, just produced. He's a filmmaker, and they came up with an idea, Vegan Story Bomb. So you can check that out on my Facebook page or my YouTube. Basically, it's called Vegan Story Bomb. And what they did was they told their story of how they went vegan, and they would like others to do the same. So spread your message through Facebook or YouTube or anywhere. Share your story through video, audio, or anything that's written, and share your vegan story bomb.
It's vegan story. What's the next word after story?
Bomb. B-O-M-B. Like a
B-O-M-B.
Bomb.
Oh, Vegan Story Bomb. And is that the name of the website?
No, there's no website. It's a video. And
video, okay.
You can find it on my YouTube as well as my Facebook page, Vegan Story Bomb. But I can post it on the World Peace Diet. I think I did post it on the World Peace Diet as well as the Sunday group and the facilitator group as well.
Okay.
People can go there and just check that out. And, appreciate also uploading your own video or audio or whatever just to share your story, because people love stories.
Great, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and lastly, a question. I just wanted to find out about non-vegan companies that, like, in your view, would you support non-vegan companies that come out with vegan products, like Ben and Jerry's came out with a vegan ice cream, Hellman's came out with a vegan mayonnaise. I think it was one of those non-vegan restaurant was found to actually lie, like they were lying about what was in their food. They actually had a vegan option, and it actually had animal ingredients in it. So would you support, or do you tell people to support companies that are not vegan but have vegan products?
Well, yeah, Michael, thanks. That's a good question, you know. And I guess, you know, in the best of all possible worlds, all the companies would be all vegan, and we wouldn't have to deal with that. We prefer, you know, Mel and I, we're kind of hardliners, in a way, and we prefer typically not to support non-vegan companies if there's a vegan company that makes the same thing. You know, we'd rather support the vegan company, you know, if they make the same thing. So, for example, like with ice cream, we'd rather not buy Ben and Jerry's vegan ice cream, probably because it's not up to our standards in the sense that it's GMO. I mean, the dang stuff is GMO, so I'm not going to ever buy it anyway. But because GMO is not only unhealthy, in my opinion, but it's devastating to ecosystems and wildlife. So their vegan ice cream is definitely GMO, and so we wouldn't buy it. And but even if it wasn't, I would rather buy, say, from a company that's a vegan company, just because I like supporting them and helping them out. And I think, you know, living in this world, though, it's really, you know, it's almost impossible to find, like, for example, a grocery store that's fully vegan, you know, to buy food. I mean, Whole Foods isn't vegan. Most local co-ops are not vegan, not even vegetarian. So we're going to be supporting non-vegan companies, of course. But the whole idea is, if we can, as time goes by, more and more, support other vegan companies, so that they can get stronger and begin to kind of veganize the whole marketplace. with more, and usually vegan companies tend to be more focused on sustainability, on fair trade. They're typically more, you know, smaller, more local, and all those things I think are helpful. I think the more self-sufficient we get at the community level, the more we support local and community-based businesses, the more we support vegan businesses. Veganic, of course, would be even better, veganic agricultural practices. That would be great. You know, that's great, but I cannot say that, you know, that we never, support non-vegan companies, because we do all the time. I mean, you know, I have to buy gas for the car. I mean, that's not a vegan company there, and so forth. So we just do the best we can. I look at it more in a positive way, to just as much as we can support companies that are vegan and that put the word vegan on their products, and just, you know, sort of are proud of the fact that their products are vegan and talk about it, and then support, you know, get like when we have money that we'd like to donate to causes as much as possible, if those causes are in alignment with vegan values of compassion for animals and ecosystems. So that's how we feel about it, you know. But I think, you know, like, for example, if Burger King comes out with a vegan burger, you know, it's in a way it's nice if people buy it. Otherwise, they won't keep it going anymore. But on the other hand, you won't see me going in there and buying it. So, but I think there's a lot of people that like to go to fast food restaurants, and maybe they would buy a vegan version of a burger from Burger King. So, you know, I think it's all helpful, but, and each one of us should draw the line where we feel, you know, is best in terms of supporting. As long as what we're buying is as much as possible is vegan, I think we're contributing to the healing of our, you know, of our world. That's a great question. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, awesome.
It's good to hear your voice. Great.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Take care. Yeah, Michael was talking about the people in London, Ontario, where we were just there about exactly 1 month ago, I think it was, about this time in September, and what a very active vegan community in London, Ontario. It's very inspiring to see all the vegan groups and restaurants. We ate some great vegan restaurants there, and we put on a vegan on a World Peace Diet workshop. And, it was very inspiring. So, yeah, McVegans, that's a great idea. Have a vegan, there's quite a few people with the idea, as you're probably aware, of vegan, fast food franchise operation, and that is starting to happen more and more, in various, you know, parts of the country. We're seeing that, we're springing up too. So, I have a couple of things to say. I noticed it's already getting to be, an hour and 15 minutes. So, I want to thank everyone. Feel free to continue to raise your hand if you have any questions. Right now, nobody has their hand up at the moment. So I wanted to say a couple of things. One is our wonderful friend Grace Lorraine is South Carolina in Charleston, and there's a Charleston Veg Fest, and it's this coming weekend, actually. And the basic idea was to just to let everybody know that if you happen to be in that part of the world, in near Charleston, South Carolina, Hilton Head, Georgia, you know, that whole area is called the Low Country. This wonderful woman named Carla. She set up our talk in Charleston when we were there, and she is basically organizing this Veg Fest. It's the very first one, and her name is Carla Golden, and Grace is going to be having a World Peace Diet booth there, and having World Peace Diet books available, and talking to people about veganism and world peace and spirituality, and so I think it's great. So if anybody is going to be in the area next weekend in the Charleston, South Carolina area, make sure you go by you can find out. It's called the Low Country Veg Fest. You can just go online and check it out. And it's great to see Lorena Mukde. We've all heard of her. She's a Philippi Style facilitator who's the founder of the Ethical Choices Program. And actually, I should mention one thing about that. She's going to be speaking actually at this, because she lives in Atlanta, which isn't too far away. She'll be speaking there. Also, Howard Lyman is flying in from where he lives in Seattle. He'll be speaking there. But Lorena is, she just sent out yesterday, actually, the third quarter report for Ethical Choices Program. I'm on the board. And it's amazing that they're going through a new hiring phase, hiring more people who are interested in being humane educators. So if you are interested, you really have this, like to hire people who are Wilkie Side facilitators. So they're hiring another 20 people and to go into schools locally, wherever you live. And they're looking, of course, for people in certain states and certain regions. And if you go to their website, you can see the states that they're looking for. Ethical Choices Program is the website. And, it's a great thing. They're off to a great start this September, October, this semester. Already thousands of students have been reached with programs that promote veganism in the high school, since high school age. She's an excellent trainer. She's training people in techniques that really work well, not only to bring the vegan message to the kids, but also to be asked back again by teachers and have parents not be upset. Now, that's a dance to do. So she's really figured out how to do that. Yeah, so that's really that's good news, too. So thank you, Grace, for jumping in there and getting a booth and talking to people and helping the Low Country Veg Fest, their first annual one, be a success. I think that's so fantastic. And I also wanted to respond to a question from our good friend Dorothy Torrey in Cape Cod, who basically had a little bit of a predicament the other day, and she asked me via email if I could respond to this situation. So I'll give a quick response here because I think it is interesting. So basically what she says is where she lives in Sandwich, which is on Cape Cod, a little town. It's a beautiful area there and very, very picturesque and everything. Anyway, she says there's a new goat farm in Sandwich that one can see from the main road. Even my good friend, who wrote a, quote, excellent green blog, is so happy to see the goats in a big open space frolicking around, enjoying the sunshine and the bountiful grass. So when I had lunch with her and her husband, I was most surprised that she served me crumbled goat cheese on top of a delicious and carefully prepared organic salad. I honestly did not know what to do. And so she says the mindset may be if the goats are well taken care of and humanely treated, then it's okay and really good to eat clean and unprocessed goat cheese. And goat cheese is different than cow cheese. So I guess what I can say to that conundrum there is that, first of all, it's really, I think, helpful to sort of head off this kind of a situation at the pass. Don't let it ever happen in the first place. Once you're sitting there, and there you've got it. She's especially made the goat this salad with goat cheese on it, and you're expected to eat it. It's a little bit like it's a little too late. It's always good to be clear with people as possible ahead of time, so that they're aware that I'm not eating cheese. And one of the things I think it's helpful to say in that regard when people are wondering, like, have you given up cheese, for example, and to rephrase it and say, no, I have not given up cheese. I've given up cruelty. And that's the basic idea. We're not giving up cheese. We're not giving up dairy. We're not giving up meat. We're giving up cruelty. We're giving up abuse. We're giving up violence. And so, therefore, we don't want to support that in any way. And if I eat it, then I'm supporting it because I'm actually... I'm being a consumer of the product. So So the best thing, of course, is talk to her so she's aware that even though in her mind this is a wonderful cruelty-free food, perhaps, that it's cruelty. It's always cruelty. There's no animal food that's produced without, you know, that's free of cruelty, unless maybe roadkill, but that's not produced. There's no, goat cheese. And I actually, on the resources, because I got this a couple of days ago, I put a link to the Soledad Goat Sanctuary in California website, because this is a good story. There's also one other very good resource, I think, which is the video that a lot of you have seen. It's called The Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, by James and Jenny Levesque of Tribe of Heart. It's a very good video. You can watch it online. And it basically talks and interviews and follows the story of Jim and Sherry Vandersloos, who live in Massachusetts, who are goat farmers, and who... and their story is somewhat similar to the Soledad people, but they're goat farmers. Jim and Sherry. They have a beautiful sanctuary now, but they were goat farmers, and they have a farm, and they had goats, and they were very loving to their goats and cared for their goats. But they had to, and she was a veterinarian. Sherry's a veterinarian. And so they could kind of take care of their goats, too, because she was trained as a veterinarian. Jim was a, like, third-generation goat dairy farmer. But they had to, artificially inseminate them. Of course, they don't give milk without that, which is very unpleasant for these animals. Then after they give birth to the babies, you have to steal the babies. And most of the babies have to be killed. 3 out of 4 have to be killed before you send the goats off to slaughter. And so they had to always send these animals off to slaughter. They had to send 3 out of 4 of the goats off to slaughter, plus the mothers off to slaughter, and so you're constantly sending these animals off. You don't usually kill them yourself, but you send them off. You send them away. They're not going to give milk without that, and so you've got to keep reimpregnating them again to keep the flow happening. And so they finally went to the slaughterhouse. They just thought, we've got to see what happens to our goats. We love our goats, and we just want to see. And so they went and they watched as this guy put the goat down on the floor and took the knife out and slit the throat of this little goat that they loved. And it was it was just very painful for them to watch this, and they thought, they didn't want to be part of that anymore. So they went vegan. And now they have Maple Farm Sanctuary in Massachusetts. It's kind of not too far from the Cape. It's about an hour. I think it's in can't remember the name of the town, but anyway, Mashpee maybe, and not Mashpee, something else. But anyway, they have a wonderful sanctuary, and they educate a lot of people about the situation. And the same thing is true of these people in California. They had an award-winning goat cheese. I mean, they were famous. They were successful. They really had mastered the art of goat cheese. But it was the same thing for them. They realized, it's unethical. I mean, you're killing, you're abusing, you're enslaving, you're raping, stealing. And so they went vegan, and now they're making vegan cheese, and apparently it's really good. It's probably going to be award-winning vegan cheese. They'll be making before too long. So the whole idea is that if you look behind the curtain, there's always cruelty involved, and it's never, how it looks. I've seen this so many times. Madeline and I have been to Switzerland. We go to Switzerland a lot. And I remember how we would walk around down in the town squares where they had selling goat cheese in the restaurants and goat cheese. And everybody thinks it's so cool. It's so healthy. It's so sustainable. It's so wonderful. But you go up into the hills and see the goats up there, and they're not. They're very much. They maybe go out part of the day into a field, but then you go back, and then they go back into this dingy, stinking place where they have to, they have to stay. It stinks. I mean, it's terrible, dark. Most people don't ever see all that. They don't see the other violence. They don't see the various forms of abuse, the castration, and they're doing all kinds of things. You don't know what they're doing. So it's just an illusion of kindness, and it's not, and there's nothing in there that you need to be healthy. I mean, there's no, you know, I haven't had any goat cheese in 40 years. I mean, it's not necessary. there's no nutrients. We're not little goats. We're not little cows. We don't need the mammary secretions of bovine animals to be healthy. So there's no excuse for it. It's just a way to make money off of enslavement. It's like slavery in the 1800s. You're just abusing, killing, harming for profit. You know, it's a tradition that's violent and abusive. And so, you know, it's good to explain as best we can to people. But in order to explain, we have to understand what really goes on behind the scenes. So once we understand that, everything gets much clearer, and we realize suddenly, no, I'm not going to be partaking. I'm not going to participate in it. I'm not going to give my seal of approval to that by participating in this. And, you know, so it may be awkward. I may have to say, okay, well, you know, the salad looks great, but I'm not going to participate in eating the cruelty. So. You know, take it off as best you can, remove it, whatever, put it to the side, and eat the rest of it. You know, that's the basic thing. It's not about personal purity. You know, if you eat a little bit by mistake, it's not the end of the world. It's no big deal, really. But the whole idea is it's about making a statement for these animals, because they don't have anyone. If we don't make a statement for them and we know better, then how are people who don't know better ever going to know any better? They're not going to know any better. If we're not consequent and in a loving way, it's not judging anyone. It's people mean well. You know, we've all been lied to. That's the problem. We continue to be lied to. But just to, you know, but we, if we, once we understand the situation, then we can be an example, and we can plant a seed with love. And not, again, not blaming anyone, just saying, you know, this is, you know, for me, this is what I really love to do, is have it without any animal foods, any animal products, any abuse of animals. And it's just fantastic. You know, I don't need that. And I don't want to participate. I prefer not to participate in that. And so you're doing it in a loving way and planting a seed. And then you're not trying to change the person. Hopefully they will begin to reconsider, but you can't force them to. You know, all we can do is plant seeds and do it as effectively as we possibly can. So thank you so much, Dorothy, for that beautiful example and question. And then there's also one other question from another fellow who's in our program in Florida, and he wanted me to respond to it, so I'm going to quickly respond. He just said that what he has a problem with is when he's talking to people and they don't see the violence. You know, that, he said, what do you say to people? You know, he said, they talk about how, you know, they go through Indiana, they see all these fields, they see the cows out there, they're just happy. And everything is fine. It's kind of the same thing, really, that I was just talking about. You know, this public face of animal agriculture. You don't really see the misery of pigs and chickens and turkeys and ducks and geese and other animals and fishes that are confined in these stinking sheds where they never see the light of day under absolutely abysmal conditions. And what we see is maybe we see some cows, and they look like they have enough land, and they're used for meat, typically, or sometimes for dairy, and or goats or sheep, perhaps, in rural areas. And people think, oh, it's so idyllic. They're taken care of. They're given plenty to eat. And what's the problem? So, again, it's about just sharing our understanding that these are animals that are enslaved. They're killed at a fraction of their normal lifespan in a premeditated killing. They're also typically mutilated in a variety of very painful ways, and the whole system is devastating to the environment, and it's they're terrified and in enormous pain when they're killed, and it's a betrayal of their trust of us too. So to explain to explain so people understand, because there's this continuous smokescreen really being offered up by industries, and people also like to believe it, that somehow there's no harm involved. And Whole Foods and other companies that are making much more money in their markup of grass-fed and free-range and organic animal food products are doing the best they can to keep this thing going, because financially people spend just a lot more money on meals that have meat and dairy. People, I was just talking to Tara, I think it was, about this, how she was talking to a guy And people won't think twice about walking to a restaurant and spending $40, $50 for a steak, you know. I mean, you know, it's where they make their big money. You know, but if it's the vegan foods are less expensive, there's less profit margin. And the same thing is true of meat and dairy in general. They're just so subsidized. There's so much more money to be made, and that's what people are used to, and it's what's also basically coupled in our imagination with a good life and with being more wealthy and successful and all those things, eating more meat and dairy. So there's all these overtones, and our job, I think, really is to be a loving example of an alternative way of living based on equality and sustainability, respect for other beings, and to be happy and healthy while we're doing it. So just to share with people some of these ideas. And I think Cowspiracy is a great film to share with people. There's other films, also other resources, quite a few of them. We have, at one point we made a whole long list of these films. It keeps changing. So many of them, they're just pouring out now. You go on YouTube and, oh man, there's so many films coming out. It's wonderful to see. But I want to, I think I should kind of wrap it up here. It's, basically time for us to stop. I know in the East Coast it's already 10:30. So I'm going to stop here. It would have been nice. I'll just mention, Lily Macy is with us on the call. And this coming Sunday, Madeline and I are going to be on World Peace Night Sunday. That, as you all know, I think you've heard us mention this before, we have the... Lily does it. World Peace Diet Sunday, which is a starts at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, and it's reading the World Peace Diet, and she's read it through with people that, you know, together in a group setting. Now on the third reading, it takes about a year to read the whole book together as a group. And if you go to just worldpeacediet.com and then go to upcoming events, and at the very top of the page, we have listed there World Peace Diet Sundays, ongoing public teleconference reading and discussion of the World Peace Diet facilitated by Lily Macy. The number to call is 712-432-3900. The code is 568-364-POUND. And Madeline and I will be on starting at the beginning, 5 p.m., talking about the writing of the World Peace Diet and also some of the things that we have been learning lately, and the upcoming tour to Asia. So also, if you know anyone that might be interested in getting a good dose of the World Peace Diet in a public reading, and Lily is a fantastic facilitator and has found that this is a wonderful vehicle for people to become more effective advocates and activists. And a lot of people have gone on from the World Peace Diet Sunday to become World Peace Diet facilitators too. So that's next Sunday. And then also next Sunday, I will be speaking, which is this coming Sunday, speaking at the Pro-Intersectionality Conference at the VegFest in London via Skype, talking about how, you know, agriculture and speciesism is really the foundation of racism, sexism, and ableism, and other human justice issues in many ways. So that will be up on YouTube afterwards, and if you want to watch that, I don't think you'll probably be in England, but that's kind of a big deal, the first time that's ever been done. And then we're going to be leaving and going to China. In fact, there's a guy actually calling in right now from China. So, but anyway, we're going to be going to China, and so next, I just want to say that next month, November, the third Thursday in November, we are probably, I would say virtually, certainly not going to be able to have our usual third Thursday. I mean, we've gone for over 5 years, we're never missing one, but I think we're going to miss one because we're going to be in the middle of, you know, in Asia, and I don't think I'm going to be able to get to it. And we'll see how it goes, but... if not, then the next time we'll be getting together will be in December, the third Thursday in December, which is the 22nd. So we'll be calling in from probably at that point Maui. So so I want to thank everyone for joining us on this call. I love you all. Madeline and I send you our love. We really appreciate the efforts you're all making. Again, it's the same thing. I don't know where the time flew by, but it's just wonderful to hear the efforts that are being made and the wonderful things that are coming through you all. And keep planting those seeds, and remember to enjoy the process. It's important not to get activist burnout, which is possible. And remember, there's a lot of beautiful things happening, and there are a lot of people helping to make a better world. So keep up the great work that you're all doing, and we'll be in touch again in December. And I'll just probably, I guess, close here. And again, thanking all of you. Bless you all. And here's the geese to help us ride home on wings of joy, peace, and love, cruising through the election season and into a world of greater awareness and understanding. So thank you all again. Much love to you all. Thanks.